What if there were a fountain of youth pill that could add decades to your life? Would you take it? Unlocking the Fountain is a podcast about the mysteries of aging and the scientific quest to slow, stop, or even reverse it.
When do you think we're going to have the first 150-year-old? I think that person's already alive.
Unlocking the Fountain. Available now on CBC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
Hey, I'm Tom Power. Welcome to Q. Okay, so let me set the scene here. It's Moscow, just after the revolution. A nobleman named Alexander Rostov is sentenced to house arrest for the rest of his life at a very fancy hotel. But he is told if he steps foot outside the hotel, he'll be shot on the spot. Over the years, in the hotel, he makes friends, he loses friends, he falls in love. That's the setting of this new show called A Gentleman in Moscow. The Count is played by Ewan McGregor, and Mary Elizabeth Winstead plays this very glamorous movie star who visits the hotel. She makes a pretty dramatic entrance, or her dogs do, until the Count reins them in.
I'm afraid they're quite ill-bred.
Oh, on the contrary, they appear to be perfectly bred.
What I meant to say is that they are ill-behaved.
Behavior is a matter of handling, not breeding.
Oh, my. I should mention that the two actors you just heard there, Mary Elizabeth Winstead and Ewan McGregor, a little bit of sparks flying maybe. Well, they're married in real life. Kind of cool. You might know Mary Elizabeth Winstead from playing Ramona in Scott Pilgrim versus the World, one of the most iconic Canadian movies to some generations. Mary Elizabeth Winstead dropped by the Q studio to speak with guest host Talia Schlanger. I was kind of bummed I wasn't around for that one. Talia asked her about that role in A Gentleman in Moscow and where she took the inspiration from for the role.
Well, I did some reading up on a few Russian actresses of the time to kind of learn about them and the way they behaved and kind of their what their manner might have been like. I wasn't able to actually find film on the actresses I was reading about, but I did find film on many actresses, you know, who were either British or American from, you know, as early as I could find in terms of talkies and how they spoke and how they moved, and particularly like Joan Crawford was one that I really liked. I liked finding really early films of hers where she played these like hard, brash women who were often, villainous in some way.
And by the way, there's a name for you ladies, but it isn't used in high society outside of a kennel. So long, ladies.
But she just absolutely loved being that kind of, you know, bad woman in a sense. And
yeah.
So I watched a lot of that kind of film and tried to take inspiration from lots of places to kind of find who she was.
I imagine the wardrobe helped a bit too.
Oh, yeah.
Like you're wearing this very, maybe you can describe it better than I can, and maybe how that wardrobe informed your character as well.
Absolutely. I mean, when you look back at the 20s, it's really interesting to kind of see how bare a lot of the clothes were, particularly for the women, you know, who were famous at the time. And in Russia, it was the same way, which I was really surprised to see, you know, some of the famous actresses, photos of them, you know, in see-through clothing and all of the stuff that you would think would be very shocking, and I'm sure was, and was meant to be provocative in that way. So, I think she is provocative, but also such a diva, you know, the fabric is so luxurious, and most of the clothes that I was wearing were true vintage pieces, and so they had this like real history to them, and you know, the velvets and the, you know, the thread that just feels like it's like gold or something, you know, it just feels like it's the kind of thing we don't really see anymore, that kind of attention to detail and the way the clothes were crafted. So all of that really added to the character for sure.
The aesthetic of the show is amazing, and it's sort of central to the feeling of it and the enjoyment. And also, the love story is so central,
yeah.
And it's between you and the Count. And as I said in the intro, you're married in real life. I imagine that makes some things easier and some things harder. Is that fair to say?
You know, I think in a lot of cases, I'm sure that would be true. I think for us, it really is just easy. It's really so much fun because we both love to act. We love to act with each other, and we love to hang out with each other. So it just sort of marries all of our favorite things. So it's really, there's nothing difficult about it, I don't think. you know, I would imagine maybe if we didn't really like the material, you know, we would struggle with that, but we would struggle with that whether we were together or not.
Yeah.
So I think again, being each other's, like, you know, partner only would make that easier as well. So, yeah, we're very lucky.
Good evening. I'm so pleased to drag yourself away from the flower arrangements.
Pleasure is mine, Miss Urbanova.
Oh, please. Call me Anna.
Shall we?
So, wardrobe is a huge part of transformation in some of the characters that you've played. I also want to ask you a little bit about Star Wars and about playing Hera in Ahsoka.
Classified. I'm a general. Nothing's classified to me.
I'm sorry. I cannot unseal the document without authorization.
Well, then I'm authorizing it.
I'm not sure you can.
Want to bet?
Would you tell me a little bit about how having a green face helped you dive into that universe?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because obviously I'm not really looking at myself, you know, when I'm playing the role. So I kind of forget that I'm green in a way. but when I would look in the mirror, the thing that would really kind of tip it into feeling like, oh, I'm really totally not myself was actually the contacts, because I've got these otherworldly, almost alien-like blue-green lenses that are sort of bigger than my eyes, you know, so the blue really kind of covers a lot of my eyeball, and looking at myself in the mirror with those eyes, it's like, okay, this is a completely different creature. It's totally far from who I am. So I think the combination of all those things really kind of helped me feel like that character. And then, you know, you have to also kind of make her a real person and a real mom and all of these things that make her feel relatable on top of that.
That's the thing that I do notice in your career, is like stepping into these hyper real situations or very stylized worlds like you're talking about, yeah, and grounding them in reality.
Yeah, that's just one of the fun things about it to me. I think that's such a great challenge, is to kind of find what's underneath. You know, if you're talking about like an Ahsoka, you might be talking about going on a ship and going to find this villain out in another galaxy. But really underneath it, you can relate that to something that's actually much more normal and relatable. To the struggles that people go through in their everyday lives. And I think that's something that Star Wars does really well. You know, the stories are always about family. They're always about the struggles and the bonds between family and loved ones and that kind of thing. So you can always kind of distill it down to that.
I'm Tom Power. You're listening to Q. Coming up, more of guest host Talia Schlanger's conversation with Mary Elizabeth Winstead.
Think of your favorite one-hit wonder.
Or that overpriced toy your parents would never let you have.
Or that TV show that no one else remembers because it was canceled way too soon. Now what if we could fix it? I'm Francesca Ramsey.
And I'm DeLon Grant. And after 20 years of friendship, we are now hosting a new nostalgia podcast called Let Me Fix It.
Each episode, we'll dig into our favorite celebrities, shows, and brands of yesteryear, and then imagine what it would take to repackage them for relevance today.
Think of our show as an intervention, but with way less stakes.
So subscribe to Let Me Fix It wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
On Family, you are very unique in that you have a full Star Wars family.
Yeah.
Like, you and your husband's also played Obi-Wan Kenobi. You played Hera in,
yes,
Ahsoka.
Yes.
I heard a very cute story about your son meeting one of his Star Wars heroes. Would you indulge?
Yeah.
Would you indulge me for folks who haven't heard it?
Well, while I was shooting Ahsoka, my son was about a year old, maybe a little under a year, and he had a few different Grogu stuffed animals kind of around his room, and he really loved them. He didn't really know the show, The Mandalorian, but he knew his stuffed animals, and even in stuffed animal form, there's something that has a special, like, you know, draw about it. Like, he just was like, I want that. I love that. Who's that? That's my Grogu. So I thought it would be so cool to kind of tell him that he could come and meet the real life Grogu if he wanted to, you know, at my work. And so he was so young. I was like, I don't really know how much he comprehended that. But I was telling him that and, you know, trying to get him excited about that. And so they organized on our set to have the real life, you know, puppet of Grogu brought.
Wait, he's a puppet?
Yeah, he's a puppet and he's not, believe it or not.
Okay, Mary, that was a little harsh.
I know, and I hate to let you down.
Yeah.
But, and you know, the whole team that brings him to life was there. And so we sort of really built it up and Ewan brought Laurie, our son, to set. And we walked into the room and Grogu started talking and moving and saying hello. And our son was like, what is going on? He started screaming. I kept like trying to, you know, bring him close to it and he would just scream and like crawl back onto me. And he was like crawling up my neck and like trying to get away. And I was just like, oh my God, this was so not the reaction I was hoping for. I was like, oh, I just felt bad for everyone involved.
That's too funny though.
Yeah.
So that's a couple years ago. What does he think that you do now? Like, how do you explain what you do?
You know, he definitely has seen Ewan and I both on screen. He's seen a couple of scenes from Ahsoka and he calls it Mommy in Green. And sometimes he actually will ask me to do Mommy in Green and I have to impersonate myself.
Oh.
And we have like a whole scene, you know, where I say my lines and then he has like improvised lines that he says back to me. And like he directs me, like if I'm really, he knows if I'm really being Mommy in Green or like, you know, if I'm really doing the right voice and everything. Because the way Hera speaks and the way I speak are a little bit different. So I have to really get into the character of Mommy in Green.
I love this so much. And like Star Wars fans, like your son, are notoriously, you know, like very into it. They're hardcore fans. How did you experience that kind of fandom?
It was amazing. I mean, I think when we first experienced that, the cast and I were at Celebration in London, which is like this big kind of Star Wars event where everybody from every Star Wars project kind of converges and we go out on stage and we have panels and in front of, you know, a huge audience.
Please welcome to the stage, Mary Elizabeth Winstead.
And so that was so exciting to kind of walk out onto the stage and feel just so many people coming back at you with so much enthusiasm. I was like, wow, okay, yeah, we're doing this. This is so amazing. So that's just so cool to be able to be a part of something that connects with so many people and, you know, all over the world.
Fans have been wondering which character you might be playing.
I am playing Hera Syndulla.
I mean, there was speculation.
Did you have a frame of reference for that level of recognition from other things that you've done in your career?
You know, I've had moments of things that felt, you know, large in that way. I remember when we were promoting Scott Pilgrim and we were at Comic-Con and there was just like so much love for it there and so much excitement and a few things like that where I've felt it to a certain degree. But it's different. It's a totally different beast. I think, you know, I've done, you know, it was Birds of Prey was had its own kind of fan base in that way. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I've sort of, I guess, little stepping stones to feel like, oh, okay, yes, I've been here before. Maybe not quite like this, but, you know, somewhat familiar.
Pretty big, yeah. You mentioned Scott Pilgrim. I want to play a clip from it
if we could.
Yeah, here we go.
What kind of tea do you want?
There's more than one kind?
We have blueberry, raspberry, ginseng, sleepy time, green tea with lemon, green tea with lemon and honey, liver disaster, ginger with honey, ginger without honey, vanilla almond, white truffle, blueberry chamomile, vanilla walnut, constant comment, and Earl Grey.
Did you make some of those up?
I think I'll have sleepy time.
That sounds good to me.
Okay, that's a bit from Scott Pilgrim versus the World, which was based on a Canadian comic, and it stars Michael Cera as Scott and my guest Mary Elizabeth Winstead as Ramona, who we heard there. There's a lot going on in your face while we're listening to that clip.
I just sound so young because I'm not used to just hearing the voice, you know. So I think it really stood out to me, like how different I sound. I didn't realize I sounded so different then as opposed to now.
What do you remember from your first day on set of Scott Pilgrim?
Oh, gosh. It's hard. It's kind of a blur just because we had so much time to prep before we actually got to shoot. So by the time we were on set, we were all had been there for a couple months, I think, here in Toronto.
Really? Like rehearsing?
Training
for a couple
and rehearsing, wow. And just, you know, everything, which you don't really get the luxury to do that anymore quite in the same way. So that was really special. We all got to really bond so much before we even, you know, started shooting. We all knew each other so well, almost like school buddies going through, you know, fight training and band rehearsals and all this stuff together.
And so more recently, you are in Scott Pilgrim Takes Off, which came out last year, and it's not exactly a sequel, but you're back in it as Ramona. But it's 15 years since the original film came out. What was it like stepping, like putting that coat back on, you know?
Yeah, it was really unexpectedly kind of deep experience for me, because I think going into it, I just thought it would be really fun, you know? It'd be so fun to revisit it. It's just such a great beloved project with, you know, all of these actors who I still love so much. But definitely, I didn't know or expect that they were going to focus so much on Ramona's journey. So with each episode that came in, I was sort of more and more blown away of like, oh my God, this is really profound and it's really moving and complex and beautiful. And I was amazed by what they were able to do with it. I never expected that you could do a sort of a quote unquote sequel to something and have it just bring so much kind of wisdom to it that it almost elevates it in another way, a different way.
Yeah. Know? Did you notice a change in yourself as an actor or performer in that time, stepping into the same role, but in a completely different point in your career?
Absolutely. Yeah. I was really grateful for the opportunity to revisit the character and get to kind of grow with her. There was definitely some wisdom brought to it, being kind of an older person looking back at their younger selves. And we're all going through that as well, you know, so we're all looking back at ourselves 15 years ago. So I could definitely bring myself to that.
I want to look back even further a little bit, if we can,
yeah,
to one of your very early TV roles when you were still in your teens.
Oh, my God.
I know. And you joined a pretty zany but immensely popular show that I used to love watching when I stayed home sick from school. And it sounded a little bit something like this.
Same journey! No, Miguel, it is too soon. You're not prepared to enter hell.
Okay, just inside the closet. If you let go, I can get to her.
Do not be deceived, my son. The closet is a portal to the nether world.
What are we listening to?
That is a show called Passions, daytime television soap opera.
Yeah. Which I would describe as pretty zany.
Pretty zany. Is
that fair?
Yeah. Yeah. That's maybe a mild way of putting it. But yeah, that's pretty. Yeah.
Yeah. As we heard in the clip, there was a closet that doubled as a gate to hell. There were demonic possessions alongside all the other drama that comes along with the soap opera. But the reason I wanted to ask you about it is, like, all of that aside, acting on a soap opera as a kid must have been, I don't know what adjective to use to describe that experience. So maybe you can fill in that blank for me. What was it like for you?
You know, it was really exciting to get a job like that.
You're 14.
I was 14. Yeah. It was my first time coming out to LA to audition. I came out to LA to do pilot season, and I auditioned for a bunch of things, came really close on some pilots, and then ended up getting this soap opera. So it was very exciting to be like, oh my God, I went out to LA and I booked my first big job. And then, you know, it was an interesting experience because I didn't really know kind of what to expect. I had worked a little bit on some episodic things. It was hard work. It was good training in the sense that I had to like learn my lines and hit my mark, and all of that stuff was of the utmost importance. So I think it was good in that sense. But there was very little. I mean, as you can hear from the clip, there wasn't a lot of, you know, mining of like your inner artist and all of that stuff, which even at 14, that was kind of what I really yearned for. So after a year or so of being on it, I sort of asked if I could leave so I could pursue other things, because it just felt a bit like I'm a kid and I'm not really happy on this job.
It didn't put you off of acting. It reaffirmed for you that you're looking for something else.
Exactly.
Out of your craft.
Yes. Yes. And I knew there was just something else, you know, that I could feel was tangible. Mm-hmm. And I certainly wasn't expecting like to suddenly be like doing some sort of Oscar worthy things. But I did feel that there was something that could require more of me.
If we fast forward to now, like if we look back on that 14-year-old person who was like, I think there's something more artistically fulfilling out there for me and I'm going to pursue it. What do you now find most satisfying as an actor?
I think I'm still always looking for that kind of emotional connection to something. I think in pretty much everything I've done, I've always been able to find that, you know, and whether it be like a sort of zany, as you put it, like horror film or something, or, you know, like finding that emotional connection that is like, okay, what's this person going through and what's their arc and what's their journey? And at least having that to work with is the first and foremost what I'm looking for. And I just need to personally connect with it. You know, whether or not other people do is sort of out of my control. But as long as I do, then that's the most important thing.
Mm. And it's, when I think about your filmography and all the things that you've done, it really is a special kind of talent to be able to bring that grounded reality into other worlds and share the human experience. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Thank you.
Congrats on A Gentleman in Moscow. It's really an exciting series.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I'm really excited for people to see it, and I hope that they enjoy it.
Let's guest host Talia Schlanger's conversation with Mary Elizabeth Winstead, who is one of the stars of the new limited series, A Gentleman in Moscow. It is streaming now on Paramount Plus. That is, well, Paramount Plus is where I watch Cheers almost every night. That's when I'm watching. I don't know what you're watching these days for your comfort viewing as the world becomes more complicated. Cheers is my comfort viewing. The other conversation we have up today is my chat with Ani DeFranco. Actually, it's speaking of the world becoming more complicated, my favorite part of the Ani DeFranco conversation happened towards the end. So Ani's been singing about reproductive rights for decades, right? And I asked her, after years and years of singing about women's civil rights, about reproductive rights, she sees the overturning of Roe v. Wade by the U.S. Supreme Court. And how do you keep going when it feels like things are going backwards? I don't know if you've been struggling with that. She had such a perfect answer to it that I got kind of emotional listening to it. And I think I'm glad people are going to get a chance to hear it. Go check that out on our podcast. Even if you just skip, honest to God, even if you just skip towards the end, I would listen to the whole thing, but that moment is really beautiful. Okay, go check that out. We'll see you soon. Later on.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.